All right, we're in chapter number 9 tonight, as this begins class number 5. And last week we looked at Noah's flood, and how Noah came off the ark and built an altar and sacrificed to God, and how they endured the year and 10 days on the ark, and how it pictured Jesus Christ, how they were shut into that thing. And in chapter number 9, we see God communicates here with Noah. In verse 1, it says, "And God blessed Noah and his sons, and said unto them, Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth." Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. So, Noah has something in common with who? All right, with Adam. All right, again, there are several similarities between Adam and Noah. Both were sole possessors of the earth. Adam and Eve, Noah and his family. But they were, Adam was in charge, Noah's in charge. Okay? So, they were both the sole possessors, if you will. The kings of the kingdom. Which, again, in the Old Testament, you see that kingdom. Who's in charge of the kingdoms of this world? And you see that go back and forth from Adam to Satan to Noah to Satan to Abraham to Satan. Okay, on it goes throughout, and constant battle. So they're both sole possessors of the earth. They were both commanded to multiply and replenish. The reason that is I believe both of them replaced a world that God did not want. And again, that goes to the similarities between Adam and Noah. Why would he say to both of them, replenish? The only two times in Scripture the word is used. Because they both replaced a world that God did not want. And both times that world was destroyed by a flood. So they both became sole possessors. They were both commanded to multiply and replenish. Now listen to the other similarities before you just pass these off. They both had 3 sons by name. Cain, Abel, Seth, Shem, Ham, Japheth, right? Okay, both had 3 sons by name. They both had a son who was a type of Christ, right? Abel, okay? And Noah's son was who? Type of Christ, do you know? Shem, because that's where Christ would come through, okay? They both had a son who's type of Antichrist. Okay, Ham. Okay, Ham produces the Canaan. All right, type of Christ, type of Antichrist. Couple more. They were both naked when they sinned. Their sin and nakedness is tied in, and both partook of the same forbidden fruit. Okay. If what we teach is correct, the fruit being a grape. This is what got both of them in trouble. All right? So there are a lot of similarities between the two. So before Ken Ham and Kent Holdman and these guys pass off the gap theory as just foolishness, they're not digging deep enough to see these similarities. Okay? All right, verse number 2. It says, "And the fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth and upon every fowl of the air, upon all that moveth upon the earth, and upon all the fishes of the sea. Into your hand are they delivered." Now this gives you an idea that things were different before the flood and different after the flood. All right, they had fear. The fear of you, dread of you will be upon the beasts. And today, the animal kingdom has a natural fear of man that God has placed upon them. You say, well, what about the bears that come after people, and what about the lions? It's a natural fear placed upon them. A lot of times, those animals don't attack unless they're scared, okay? And that's what the Bible teaches us here. All right, verse number 3. "Every moving thing that liveth shall be meat for you. Even as the green herb have I given you all things." All right, another difference. after the flood. Man was no longer a vegetarian. He said, every moving thing that liveth shall be meat for you. All right, verse 4. But flesh with the life thereof, which is the blood thereof, shall ye not eat. All right, so God is set against man eating or drinking blood. Okay? That's something that he would say throughout the scriptures. He says it here, which is before the law. He says it during the law. He says it after the law. Genesis 1 through 11, again, pretty much those things that we see are going to continue. Things like the death penalty, things like forbidding blood, okay, Satan tempting man, the fall of man, and all these things. When we get to chapter 12 tonight, we're now dealing with Abraham and Israel. All right, and sometimes you certainly can draw principles from that. And sometimes it's things just meant for Israel as we study Abraham, the Jewish people. But Genesis 1 through 11, you pretty much can mark down as relevant throughout the scriptures. Okay. This is one of them. In verse number 4, don't eat the blood, he says. All right? So there's several scriptures. This is before the law. Then there is during the law, Leviticus 17, 14.
For it is the life of all flesh, the blood of it is for the life thereof. Therefore I said unto the children of Israel, you shall eat the blood of no manner of flesh, for the life of all flesh is in the blood thereof. Whoever eateth it shall be cut off.
All right. And then Acts 15:20, after the law, New Testament.
But that we write unto them that they abstain from pollutions of idols and from fornication and from things strangled and from blood.
Alright, so that was the Jerusalem Council in Acts 15 to abstain from the blood. Alright, so again, a similarity here. Adam is forbidden to partake of a grape. Noah is forbidden to partake of blood. So you see the close relationship between the two, and we already studied that before. Alright, let's move then to verse number 5. And surely your blood of your lives will I require. At the hand of every beast will I require it. And at the hand of man, at the hand of every man's brother, will I require the life of man. Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. For in the image of God made he man. So this is a respect for life. All right? Capital punishment, again, was before the law here, it was during the law, and after the law. Capital punishment, all right, which is many times people would say, as far as Christians in the Bible, that's Old Testament, and there's nothing in the New Testament, okay? Those people don't know their Bible very well. All right, Numbers, so this is before the law, capital punishment. Numbers 35, verse 16.
And if thy hand is an instrument of sin, so as you die, he is a murderer. The murderer shall surely be put to death.
That was during the law. After the law, this is just one verse, but this is what Paul had to say. Acts 25, verse 11.
For if I be an offender, or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. But if there be none of these things whereof these accuse me, no man may deliver me unto them. I appeal unto Caesar.
Paul, dealing with the Roman government, said, if I have offended, I refuse not to die, because he believed in capital punishment. And in Romans 13, he wrote about that as well. Okay? So, after the law. Usually, people with their heads screwed on straight are not going to have a problem with that. Okay? Decent, moral people. You don't worry about the death penalty. You say, well, what about the people like the Democrats and saying, you know what's funny about that? They are for abortion and against the death penalty. And they're against the death penalty because thou shalt not kill. But they're for abortion. Their head's not screwed on straight. Okay? Yeah, today I had to get in my flesh. I didn't mean to. I went to Chili's, got out of my car. Here's these people in the parking lot. Open up their trunk. They got these anti-war, stop the war and the bloodshed posters. And they're going up, walking up there to the corner. And I said, why don't you people get a life? You know, and they said, and I'm thinking, man, I hope they're not from this church. But they go, oh, that's real Christian of you. I assume it's because I was dressed in a suit and tie. But I said, why don't you protest Islam and the people that are shedding the blood? You fools. Put your head on straight. They don't understand, do they? No understanding. Okay? All they do, stop the war, stop the bloodshed. That's what we're trying to do. Anyway, bloodshed. The Bible does put an emphasis, if you've noticed, in so far in Genesis, on blood and bloodshed. Okay? And some would have called it the bloody book, the Bible, and the emphasis on blood. In Genesis, we've seen bloodshed early. With Cain and Abel, we saw God shed blood when he made them animal skins, the Adam and Eve animal skins. And then Cain and Abel. And the both Testaments, Old Testament and New Testament, are, if you will, instituted with bloodshed, Christ, okay, death. And again, the lamb in the Old Testament. Blood is forbidden to be eaten in both Testaments. Innocent blood in the Bible, innocent blood is always avenged. Always avenged, innocent blood. You remember Pilate tries to wash the innocent blood off of his hands. Judas goes to, remember where Judas purchased what was called the field of blood? The field of blood, okay? Jesus shed his blood. The Christian is saved by the blood, purged by the blood, redeemed by the blood, cleansed by the blood, justified by the blood, has peace through his blood. Mystery Babylon in prophecy. Mystery Babylon is drunken with the blood of his saints. And then the return of Christ, he will have the blood's, his enemies' blood all over him, all over his garment. So from beginning to end, you see this bloodshed. It's an incredible thing when you stop to focus on that. And, you know, people that don't get into the layers of the Bible and study the Bible, you never see that stuff, do you? Okay, but it's an incredible thing to think about the emphasis on blood and being bloodshed and all these other things. Well, back here in Genesis chapter 9, he says, you shed man's blood, your blood will be shed. Okay? Alright, and it's because for in the image of God made he man. Respect for the image that man has and the potential man has to be conformed to the image of Jesus Christ. Alright, verse number 7. He continues to Noah, and you, be ye fruitful and multiply, bring forth abundantly in the earth and multiply therein. And God spake unto Noah and to his sons with him, saying, and I, behold, I establish my covenant with you and with your seed after you, and with every living creature that is with you, of the fowl, of the cattle, and of every beast of the earth with you, from all that go out of the ark to every beast of the earth. And I will establish my covenant with you, neither shall all flesh be cut off any more by the waters of a flood. Neither shall there any more be a flood to destroy the earth. So you see that God promises he will not destroy all flesh by the waters of a flood. Which tells us again, it's a worldwide. Because there have been floods, right? Okay? Just not one that will destroy all flesh, which tells us Noah's flood was, again, a universal flood. All right, God said he would not repeat. The next time the earth is destroyed, how is it destroyed?
Fire.
Okay, by fire. All right, verse number 12. And God said, this is the token of the covenant which I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for perpetual generations. I do set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be for a token of a covenant between me and the earth. See, again, Genesis 1 through 11, this token, this covenant is forever. Okay? This has to do with you and I. It's not one we're going to say, well, that's Israel's covenant. All right? No, this is for everybody. And it's a bow in the cloud. All right? The rainbow. And it tells us that the covenant is good now as it was with Noah. And again, in the book of Revelation, we see the rainbow surrounds the throne of God. With Revelation chapter 4, verse number 3.
And he that sat was to look upon like a jasper and a sardine stone, and there was a rainbow round about the throne in sight like unto an emerald.
All right, so the rainbow is around the throne, and so a rainbow that we see is just a glimpse of heaven. The higher you go, a rainbow can be seen as a full circle. All right, so we don't get the full view of heaven here. Okay, the Bible says we see through a glass darkly than face to face. But the higher you go, the more you can see that rainbow full circle. All right, and so even though the homosexuals have tried to defile that rainbow, all right, it's God's rainbow, all right, and it has nothing to do with that perverseness. It has to do with God's covenant with man. All right, and then verse number 13, for what it's worth, I do set my bow in the cloud. That's the first mention of the word cloud in the scriptures. It has to do with God's promise in the rainbow. Verse 14, and it shall come to pass when I bring a cloud over the earth, that the bow shall be seen in the cloud. And I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you, and every living creature of all flesh. And the waters shall no more become a flood to destroy all flesh. And the bow shall be in the cloud, and I will look upon it, that I may remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is upon the earth. All right, in verse number 16, this is God speaking about himself, which is common. Okay, He says, I'm going to remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature. Well, it's God speaking, but that's not uncommon. Because Jesus said, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, right? He's speaking of himself. And that's several places God speaks like that. Jesus did that. John 5:20-25.
For the Father loveth the Son, and showeth him all things that himself doeth. And he will show him greater works than he, that ye should marvel. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the hour is coming, and now is, when the dead shall hear the voice of the Son of God, and they that hear shall live.
All right, so he speaks about himself. Okay? But he doesn't say me or I. He's talking about the Son of God and God. John 11:4.
When Jesus heard that, he said, this sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby.
Okay, so that'd be like me saying, here's the reason. Bob has to go teach now, and not just me talking, and Bob has to teach class here to try to encourage and equip people. That's the way they did it. Okay, it's the way God did it. That's the way. So it's not an uncommon thing when you see things like that. It makes you wonder. Verse 16. God sets this bow in the cloud as a reminder, and you just wonder how many times God was tempted to wipe out man, and he had his bow as a covenant. You know, oh, there's my covenant. Can't do it. Won't do it. Okay. All right, verse number 17. And God said unto Noah, this is the token of the covenant which I have established between me and all flesh that is upon the earth. And the sons of Noah that went forth of the ark were Shem and Ham and Japheth. And Ham is the father of Canaan. And that is mentioned, no doubt, because of Canaan and the curse that will follow here in this chapter. So he's probably mentioned, he didn't mention Shem's son or Japheth's son, but he said Ham is the father of Canaan. All right, there's significance to that. Wanted to emphasize that. All right, 19. These are the three sons of Noah, and of them was the whole earth overspread. All right, so these men gave up everything they had to go into the ark, and each one of them gets a continent of his own, ends up. That's pretty good. Pretty good trade-off, you know. All right, Ham, here are some of the meanings of their name, give you an idea about them. Ham means burnt skin, and he settled south into Africa. All right, undoubtedly that's the black race. Okay? Shem means brown skin, settled east into Asia. All right, now to Shem would come Christ. Japheth means fair skin, and they settled north and west into Europe. Okay, Caucasian. So those are the three major races. And everything else is just a mix. Okay? And their names bear that, Ham, Shem, and Japheth. Now you say, how does that happen? That was just God that did that. There's no explanation for that. Well, how did they end up same parents in three different colors? You know, God did that for a reason. Knew what was coming. Go ahead, Sue.
What do you get the meanings for those names?
You know, I'm sure you can find any Hebrew dictionary. I'm not sure which one I got them from. Okay, there are several sources that'll tell you that Hebrew names and stuff like that. Hebrew dictionaries. Bible dictionaries, maybe. There's dictionaries that are just names alone, what names mean, that are out there. Okay, I could show you. I think I've got it in my office. One of them. I'm not sure which one I got. Okay, verse number 20. And Noah began to be an husbandman, and he planted a vineyard. Now keep in mind that either things were different before the flood, and he had done this before without a problem, or he had never done this before, or things were different after the flood and got himself in trouble here. Okay? Began to be a husbandman, planted a vineyard, and he drank of the wine and was drunken, and he was uncovered within his tent. So I don't know if he had ever gotten drunk before. I doubt it. I don't know if, I said, the flood changed things where this stuff was now potent, where it wasn't before. But the problem is, he drank, and he was drunk. And now big trouble follows. Okay? He was uncovered, and once again, we've looked at scriptures again, but this is just a reminder, drunkenness and nakedness go together. All right, this is one example, and there are other scriptures. All right, we've seen these, but Habakkuk 2:15 talks about putting the alcohol to your neighbor's mouth. What does that say, Habakkuk 2:15?
Woe unto him that giveth his neighbor drink, that puttest thy bottle to him, and makest him drunken, also that mayest look on their nakedness.
All right, so get him drunk, so they'll be uncovered. Lamentations 4:21.
Rejoice and be glad, O daughter of Eden. It dwells in the land of Uz. The cup also shall pass through unto thee. Thou shalt be drunken and shalt make thyself naked.
All right, be drunken, make yourself naked. All right, so it is, I suppose it's possible that nothing was fermented before the flood. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. Maybe it did, maybe it didn't. But it just seems the way this comes on, it was like a something new, you know, but who knows? It was probably new to Noah anyway. All right, he's uncovered within his tent. 22. And Ham, the father of Canaan, again, you see Canaan mentioned. Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father and told his two brethren without. And Shem and Japheth took a garment and laid it upon their shoulders and went backward and covered the nakedness of their father, and their faces were backward, and they saw not their father's nakedness. All right, so they understood that this was a problem, and they did not want to disrespect or defile or look upon them, so they walked in backward to cover them up. All right, Noah woke from his wine and knew what his younger son had done unto him. So Noah wakes up, and it's interesting the way that this is phrased here. It doesn't say Noah woke from his sleep, does it? That's just interesting to me. Noah woke from his wine. Woke from his wine. But he knew something had happened. Now, if he woke up covered up, and yet he knew, how can he know that his son looked at him if that's all that happened? It would be tough, because people would say, well, this was the sin he looked at his dad, and he shouldn't have. Others would say this was a homosexual act. Now, he woke up and said he knew something happened. So I tend to agree with there was probably some perversion that went on here. All right, so if you look, look at Leviticus 18. Leviticus chapter 18. And the other reason I say that is because the consequences here are great for this. Okay? All right, Leviticus 18... 16, and it uses the term uncovering nakedness, okay? And watch how it uses it here. Leviticus 18:16 says, thou shalt not uncover the nakedness of thy brother's wife, it is thy brother's nakedness. In other words, you don't have a relationship with that person, okay? But it uses the term uncover. Thou shalt not uncover the nakedness of a woman and her daughter, neither shalt thou take her son's daughter or her daughter's daughter uncover her nakedness. For they are her near kinswoman. It is wickedness. Neither shalt thou take a wife to her sister to vex her, to uncover her nakedness beside the other in her lifetime. And thou shalt not, also thou shalt not approach unto a woman to uncover her nakedness, as long as she is put apart for her uncleanness. Moreover, thou shalt not lie carnally with thy neighbor's wife to defile thyself with her. So you understand how the term is used here, right, in Leviticus, uncover. And you go back to Genesis chapter number 9, and it says, they saw the nakedness, him, verse 22, saw the nakedness of his father. They went and they covered him. Okay? So, you could probably figure out here that this was not a good thing. All right, so watch what happens now. In verse 25, if that indeed is the fact, Noah wakes up and knew what had happened, and he said, cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants shall he be unto his brethren. He curses Ham's son. Not Ham. Now why is that? Why didn't he say, cursed be Ham? Cursed his son. I think because of 9-1. God bless Noah and his sons. I don't think he could reverse that. I think. All right? Or there's something else that went on that we don't read about it. You know, that Canaan was involved in it. But I tend to think that God had blessed Noah and his sons, and he wasn't able to undo that blessing. But he could go the next generation. Okay, and he did. It is. It's very odd that he would. If this is accurate, what we think happened. He was out there anyway, you know. Who knows why he would come out and say that? It's a good question. I have a feeling he wasn't, you know, all there, all together. He was only eight, yeah. Well, you would think so. but maybe he, I don't know, maybe he... That's his choice. Well, after it was also Noah's choice to get drunk, so, you know, go figure, right? The wickedness of man. Verse 25, he says, the curse to Canaan is a servant of servants, shall he be. Right? Basically, they would be slaves. And you have to remember this. Servanthood was, you were underneath people. But slavery we think of, that we've been programmed to think of, is not the slavery God had in mind, is it? If you were to read your scriptures and what servanthood was and how the masters were to treat their servants, okay? So we automatically jump to a different view of slavery, like happened in this country or whatever. And that's, it was just man defiling what God had intended. But the servanthood part was going to be the curse, just like part with the woman was cursed, right? To be under the authority of the husband. Okay? All right, so we have a couple verses just to read in Deuteronomy concerning servanthood or slavery. Deuteronomy 24, 14 and 15.
In his day thou shalt give him his hire, neither shall the sun go down upon it, for he is poor, and setteth his heart upon it, lest he cry against thee unto the Lord, and it be sin unto thee.
All right, so that's talking to a person that was in charge of a servant. But the point was, God says, don't oppress your servants. Don't do that. Okay? They were to do, if they were to have servants or slaves, they were to do it right. All right? So just so you understand that, when you say slavery, that was biblical, but it was done the right way. All right, also, you have to keep in mind now, as he curses these different races, or blesses the races, that there are different privileges and blessings for races. For example, the Jew has different blessings, doesn't he? Than the Gentile. And the Jew has different curses than the Gentile. Okay? Men, we talk about men and women, and part of the curse back in the garden, and the childbearing and all that. Men and women, children, they have different curses, things that they have to go through. You don't have to be brilliant to understand that different countries are blessed in different ways, aren't they? I don't think, you don't have to go very far to figure that out, do you, in this country? But they are, and that's a fact. And that doesn't mean that we're better than anybody else. It's just, we just happened to reap that, didn't we? Okay? So, it just setting the pace here, it says, cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants shall he be under his brethren. 26, and he said, blessed be the Lord God of Shem, and Canaan shall be his servant. Alright, so Shem... It's interesting. Who's blessed in 26? The Lord God of Shem, isn't he? Isn't that interesting? Okay. Canaan shall be a servant, but blessed be the Lord God of Shem. Not necessarily blessed be Shem. Shem worshiped the right God. And the Shemites, every major religion in the world comes from Shem. They have a spiritual tune about them, if you will. They're tuned in spiritually. Now, not always correct, that's for sure. Okay? But they have the spiritual desire. All right? So his race is a spiritual race. Okay? That's Shem. 27, God shall enlarge Japheth, and he shall dwell in the tents of Shem. And Canaan shall be his servant. So Canaan ends up being a servant of Shem and the servant of Japheth. But he enlarges Japheth. All right. It appears Shem is blessed. It would appear this way. Shem is blessed spiritually. Ham is blessed physically. And it's hard to argue Japheth is blessed as territorially, all right, an explorer kind of a person, okay? And, you know, however you want to think, whether they're climbing Mount Everest or going to the moon or going under the sea or whatever, okay, discovering the new world, okay? Historically, although you're not going to say 100% true for everything, historically, that tends to be true. Go ahead. All right, let me get there. Now, again, this is just, I'm taking a shot at this, but I don't know. This is, if Japheth represents the white man, and the Indian comes from Shem, did the white men literally dwell in the tents of Shem? I mean, it's just interesting to think about it that way. Okay? The white race was, they expanded Europe, okay, over here, found a new world. Shem was here, drove Shem out, dwelt in the tents of Shem. All right? Again, historically, tough to argue, isn't it? Tough to argue historically. Go ahead, Sue.
Now, Islamists.
Mm-hmm.
They're Shemites, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Yes, they are.
The Iraqi, you know, they've got this jihadi mentality. They want to take over.
Yep.
According to this, they're not going to.
Well, they're probably not going to. They're going to give it a good try, but yeah. They're definitely. Yeah, I don't think they're going to either. All right, so anyway. And then, of course, history as you think of it, in our history, Canaan did become the servant of Japheth, didn't he? Now, again, I'm not saying Japheth did it correctly, but it did happen. Okay? And I think Genesis 9:24 through 27 is an amazing prophecy having to do with major races. I think it's incredible. Really, if you sit and think about it. Okay? And it's not popular with everyone, and obviously, but now, and you think about, well, what does that mean today? I would just say this today, when people get offended at this, well, God cursed this race or that race or whatever. All curses are lifted in Jesus Christ. You have to understand that. Because he became a curse for us, didn't he? Alright? So when an individual, no matter from what background or what race, gets saved, curse is lifted. Okay? Can be done away with. Alright? So, everybody's on even ground at the cross, aren't they? Everybody's in an even playing field. Alright? People say, I don't like that. I don't think that's right. Oh. Tell Noah. You know? Tell Noah. Because he's the one that announced these things here. Alright? Then let's finish the chapter. It says, and Noah lived after the flood 350 years. And all the days of Noah were 950 years and he died. So it's estimated that Noah died only a couple years before Abraham was born. You see again how they almost overlap all these major characters because they lived so long. And Noah would have lived, we're going to, chapter 11 is the Tower of Babel. Noah would have lived to see that. Where he was and all that, I don't know, he's not mentioned, but it's just interesting how far this goes. So, all right, so let me just, for clarification or any questions or comments, stop right here before we go to chapter 10. Okay? Anything? Go ahead.
You mentioned the type of Christ from Adam's son. You put Abel there. Wouldn't that be the type of Christ?
Yes. He would be. Abel brought the offering, and you're probably right. Seth would probably be a better type of Christ. All right? But I'd have to look. I'm not sure. Okay, chapter number 10 now. Verse number 1. Chapter 10, verse 1 says, now these are the generations of the sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. and unto them were sons born after the flood. The sons of Japheth, Gomer Pyle, you remember him, Magog and Madai and Javan and Tubal and Meshach and Tyrus. Now, just some of the notes that I had come across with some of these folks were Gomer was the Celt from the Celtic family, came from them. Magog, they believed to be modern Russia. Madai, ancient Medes. Javan, Greece and Syria. Tubal, south of the Black Sea. All right, now, take it for what it's worth. I don't know if it's kind of hard to know for sure if those things are accurate. All right, the sons of Gomer, Ashkenaz and Riphath and Togarma. And the sons of Javan, Elisha and Tarshish, Kittim and Dodanim. By these were the isles of the Gentiles divided in their lands, everyone after his tongue, after their families, in their nations. God starts to divide up a little bit here. All right, so the verse number 5, these were the isles of the Gentiles, could be referring to some continents and the continental drift of the continents being divided, because each continent has more or less become an island, okay, isles. This is the first time the word Gentiles appears in the Bible, and it's in chapter number 10, which we believe numerology 10 to be the number of the Gentiles. All right, verse number 6, and the sons of Ham, Cush, and Mirzam, and Phut, and Canaan. Okay, there's Canaan. So these are the sons of Ham. Cush, I found, they believe is Ethiopian, which means, Cush means black. Mizraim, Egyptian, again from Ham's race. Phut would be Libyan. His name means bow, which bow in the scripture identified with who is a bow identified with, usually?
Nimrod
and Antichrist, okay? Canaan, we know from Canaan came the Sodomites, the Amorites, Jebusites, and a few others, okay? All right, verse 7, the sons of Cush, Seba, and Havilah, and Sabeth, and Ramah, and Sapteka, and the sons of Ramah, Sheba, and Dedan, and Cush begat, somebody mentioned, Nimrod. He began to be a mighty one in the earth. All right, Nimrod, interestingly enough, rebel panther. Nimrod is the 13th from Adam, Adam being the first. 13 is the number of rebellion. If you look and flip over to Genesis 14:4, Genesis 14:4 says, 12 years they served Chedorlaomer, and in the 13th year they rebelled. 13 is usually identified with rebellion. All right, 13, the first occurrence of 13 is in Genesis 14:4. All right, so Nimrod is responsible for the first world kingdom, ancient Babylon, okay? All right, so verse number 9, speaking of Nimrod, he was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Wherefore it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. Now, it doesn't say he was of the Lord, it just says he was before the Lord. Okay? And again, type of Antichrist who used a bow, he was a hunter. Alright, verse 10. This is again numerology, 10:10. The beginning of his kingdom, the first Gentile kingdom, is found in Genesis 10:10. The beginning of his kingdom was Babel, and Erech, and Akkad, and Kelna, in the land of Shinar. Alright, so the first kingdom of the Gentiles is in 10:10, the number of the Gentiles. This is just some chapters, just a few. There are others, but you remember Acts chapter 10 and Peter's vision of preaching the gospel to Gentiles. That was in Acts 10. Somebody read and remind us of that one. Acts 10, 9 through 16, wherever we left off. Acts 10, 9 through 16.
On the morrow, as they went on their journey, and drew nigh unto the city, Peter went up upon the housetop to pray about the fifth hour. He became very hungry and would have eaten, but while they made ready, he fell into a trance and saw heaven opened, and a certain vessel descended upon him, as it had been a great sheet nipped at the four corners and let down to the earth, wherein were all the manner of four-footed beasts of the earth, and wild beasts, and the creeping things from the bowels of the air. And there came a voice to him, Rise, Peter, kill and eat. And Peter said, Not so, Lord, for I have never eaten anything that is common or unclean. And the voice spake unto him again the second time, What God hath cleansed, that call not thou common. This was done thrice, and the vessel was received up again into heaven.
All right, so Peter was given the vision to go to the Gentiles in Acts chapter 10, and that chapter is dealing with Cornelius, Gentile convert. Romans 10 talks about taking the gospel to the Gentiles. Romans 10, it's a Gentile salvation, 15 to 21.
How shall they preach I will provoke you to jealousy by them that are no people, and by a foolish nation I will humble you. And the Isaiah is very bold and saith, I was under them that sought me not. I was made manifest unto them that asked not after me. But to Israel he saith, All day long I have stretched forth my hand unto disobedient and insane people.
All right, so he talks about going to the Gentiles, going to a nation or a people to confound Israel. Talking about Gentiles or in Gentile salvation. John chapter 10, verse 16. What does that one say?
And other sheep I have, which are not in this fold, them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice. And there shall be one fold and one shepherd.
Yeah, Jesus says other sheep that are not of this fold, talking to Israel there, I got to bring them. Those are the Gentiles in John 10. I think of 1 Kings chapter 10 with Solomon. He was visited by the Queen of Sheba. Gentile. Okay? You can go probably on and on with tens and numerology dealing with Gentiles. All right? The last Gentile kingdom of the Antichrist will have 10 toes, as represented in the images, and 7 heads with 10 crowns. Okay, maybe 7 continents with 10 different nations, but 10 kings. Okay, that 10 has a lot to do with Gentiles. All right, back to chapter 10 and verse number 11. Out of that land went forth Asher and builded Nineveh and the city of Rehoboth and Calah. And recent between Nineveh and Calah, the same is a great city. And Mizraim begat Ludim and Anamim and Lehabim and Nephtuhim and Pethrusim and Kalushim, out of whom came Philistim and Kaphtorim. See Philistim there. What are we reminded of there? The Philistines. Okay? Or today's Palestinians. All right, 15. Canaan begat Sidon, his firstborn, and Heth, the Jebusite, and the Amorite, and the Girgashite, and the Hivite, and the Arkite, and the Sinite, and the Arvadite, and the Zemarite, and the Hamathite, and afterward were the families of the Canaanites spread abroad. And the border of the Canaanites was from Sidon, as thou comest to Gerar, unto Gaza, as thou goest unto Sodom, and Gomorrah, and Admah, and Zeboam, even unto Laisha. These are the sons of Ham after their families, after their tongues, in their countries, and their nations. Unto Shem also, the father of all the children of Eber, the brother of Japheth, the elder, even to him were children born. So verse 21, Eber means beyond the river, which could be a reference to the Jordan River. because it is believed from Eber comes the Hebrews. All right, Eber, Hebrew. All right, or which would be right from Shem. Shem, the father of Eber, the Hebrews. All right, then you have Japheth the elder. Now, why he says that, because we can't tell who the firstborn is, because the order usually is Shem, Ham, and Japheth, right? Japheth last. But he's called Japheth the elder, which would be true today, because Japheth today is the older brother, as in we're the ones that send missionaries and care packages and take care of the other brothers, don't we? Mm-hmm. That's just, again, history shows that. All right, Japheth the elder. All right, and, you know, you can go on with examples like that. All right, verse 22, the children of Shem, Elam, and Asher, and Arphaxad, and Lud, and Aram, and the children of Aram, Uz, and Hul, and Gether, and Mash. All right, Uz, where do you see Uz from? Where's the land of Uz? Yep. All right. It's named for Shem's grandson. It's mentioned as Job's home in the oldest book of the Bible, the book of Job. Okay. Then 24, and Arphaxad begat Salah, and Salah begat Eber, and unto Eber were born two sons. The name of one was Peleg, for in his days was the earth divided, and his brother's name was Joktan. Now again, the earth divided is possibly the continental drift, I don't know, but the earth was divided. If it was divided after the flood, or the flood caused the drift, you know, again, it would make sense that the animals were easily, it was easier access for the animals to get to the ark from all over the globe if the world continents were one, okay? And then at some point there was continental drift. I don't know when that was, if it was a result of the flood or if it was in these days. Did something happen? For in his days was the earth divided? Is that when God literally divided it, or was that just people division? So, who knows? Interesting, though. Jim?
It would be when God separated the waters from the land, you know, and then now he's separated them. You know, he kind of pulled them apart just by separating the waters from the land.
It's possible, yeah.
Among
the waters. Yeah. Interesting to see when that all took place. All right, verse 26 says, and Joktan begat Elmadad and Shelef, and Hazar Maveth, and Jerah, and Hadoram, and Uzel, and Dikla, and Obal, and Abimael, and Sheba, and Ophir. These are great names for your kids. And Havilah, and Jobab. All these were the sons of Joktan. And their dwelling was from Mesha, as thou goest unto Sephar, a mount of the east. These are the sons of Shem, after their families, after their tongues, in their lands, and after their nations. These are the families of the sons of Noah, after their generations and their nations. By these were the nations divided in the earth, and after the flood. Okay. Go ahead, Rachel.
I've been doing a little research on the term children.
Okay.
And the first time that the word child is mentioned is in Genesis 3:16. And if you reference that to John 3:16, in Genesis 3:16 is when God said that woman would be in pain, giving birth, and John 3:16 obviously is where God gave us his son and it was painful.
Okay.
And then in Genesis 6:4, that's the next mention of children, and that's when the sons of God intermingled with the people that were here, the giants in there, and those were the wicked children.
Right.
And then the next time it's mentioned is in the line of Jesus, but it doesn't mention it in Ham or Japheth. It only mentions the children in Shem, which is where Jesus came from.
Really? You ought to put that together. That's interesting.
So I just thought, and then you just mentioned the land of Uz, which was Job, which has to do with suffering.
Right.
So I just thought that was really neat. Because it's not Genesis 3:16, which parallels John 3:16.
Mm-hmm.
So
Yeah. You shouldn't spend much time studying the Bible. Right? Why
would you do that?
That's good. Interesting stuff to be found. All right, any other questions or comments on chapter 10 before we move on? All right, see what's going on here? Just a little side light of what happened to everybody, their families, Shem, Ham, Japheth. All right, chapter 11. And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. All right, that's just either a way to say the same thing or one written language and one spoken language. I don't know. All right, but one language and of one speech, probably referring to the same thing. In this chapter, Lot shows up in verse 27. So it sets the stage for the days of Lot that Jesus mentioned, right? Mentioned days of Noah, and then he mentions the days of Lot, like for his return. So the days of Lot, this chapter 11 sets that stage. You're going to see integration of people and trying to be a one world religion and government. And as it says here, they would be of one language and of one speech. Okay? Now, the last days in the kingdom of the Antichrist, you can bet he's going to be of one language and of one speech. There's some things we can learn from this. Okay? And he's going to try to unite everybody. And there's going to be a world ruler like Nimrod was here. Okay? Revelation. Did I put Revelation up there? Revelation 13:2. Revelation 13:2.
Which I saw was like a leopard, and his feet were as feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his feet and great authority.
All right. So he was diverse like a leopard. This was the Antichrist kingdom. Diverse. Feet as a bear. Strong, okay, a lot of times associated with Russia, and the mouth was the mouth of a lion, which is associated with English. So in the last days, no doubt, the universal language is English, and that will be the language of the Antichrist, okay? All right, so you have one language, one speech. Verse 2, and it came to pass as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. All right, Shinar is in the area of Babylon, is identified in several places with the Antichrist's kingdom, Shinar. Okay, we saw Genesis 10:10, the beginning of the kingdom. Nimrod's kingdom is mentioned in the land of Shinar. Okay, that's one place. This is another place of Shinar. Daniel is another place with Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel 1:1.
In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem, and besieged it.
All right. So Babylon and Nebuchadnezzar was in the same land, the land of Shinar. Okay, Babylon. And then Zechariah, picking this up midstream, is when basically this beast comes and carries away Israel. Well, it's found in Zechariah 5, Zechariah 5, 10 and 11.
Then said I to the angel that talked with me, whither do thee bear the ephah? And he said unto me, to build it a house in the land of Shinar, and it shall be established and set there upon her own base.
All right, so they're carried away in the land of Shinar. Okay? Alright, so again, the kingdom of Antichrist identified with that. Verse 3, and they said one to another, go to, let us make brick and burn them throughly. Burn them throughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime had they for mortar. Okay, so in verse 3, again, one language, one speech, they said, let us. No mention of God, no, he does not factor in. And, you know, the Bible always has subtleties here. They had brick for stone. Man made for God made. Okay? Imitations. They never last like the originals. You can't improve on God's. Brick for stone, slime for mortar. Man always tries to substitute what God intended for our conveniences. But anyway, that just shows you their kingdom isn't going to last. Okay? How many times you would read that through, though? Oh, they may have brick for stone. There's a message there, though, isn't there? Okay? Verse 4. And they said, go to, again, let us build us a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven, and let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. All right, so the tower is mentioned. Again, kind of one of the early symbols of man trying to reach God, right? And if you think that through, you see that totem poles, church steeples, obelisks, something high. You got to reach to the heavens. Twin towers, skyscrapers. Man trying to ascend to God. All established back here. Okay, let's build us a tower. All right, they want to reach the heaven because they feared to be scattered. And again, that clouds up in the clouds, which is a type of, you know, or a symbol of achieving a godlike status. You know, now it's send the space shuttle up in the clouds, right? Let's get up there. Let's get up there in the aircrafts and all that other stuff and see what we can find. Okay, let's ascend. Now, they were afraid here to be scattered. Were they afraid of Cain's judgment way back when? They didn't want to be scattered. That was what they said here. Lest we be scattered. I don't know. Man is afraid to be alone, isn't he, sometimes? And man is afraid to be alone. Whether it's just, you know, they feel like they have to have this unified, you know, to stand against God. I don't know. But it's, they did not want to be scattered.
That's good for Christians as well as heathen. You know, even the Christians want to be in cities.
Mm-hmm. You know, well, the problem with this one is us. And I'll tell you what, you raise a good point. I don't know if you intended this, but churches today, what are we going to do? Let us do it this way. If you don't factor in the Lord, you'll be alone. You know, I mean, and we do need to be careful with that. We want to be unified in the body of Christ. But we better not leave God out of it. Okay, and this is what they were doing without God, though. They wanted to make a name for themselves. And you know, God's judgment on the lost is, it's hell, but it's a separation from God, isn't it? They're alone. That's a judgment. Anyway, these folks said, we don't want to be scattered upon the face of the whole earth. Verse 5, and the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded. That's interesting, isn't it? Well, the Lord came down to visit. You know, whether the angel of the Lord came down, you know, you wonder, I was thinking about this today, did the angel of the Lord come in and say, hey, what you doing?
Nice place.
What's this all about? Ask questions. I don't know. I mean, he may not have done it. He didn't have to do that, but it is interesting. The Lord came down to see the city and the tower. Like he couldn't see it up there, right? A little closer inspection. You know, kind of like Adam. Adam, where art thou? And who told you you were naked? You know, all these kinds of things. Verse 6, and the Lord said, behold, the people is one. And they have all one language. And this they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. The people is one, he says. Not a good thing. It's like a one world government. Again, oneness is not to be done outside of Christ. It's not to happen. And you see that attempted over and over again today. All right, and then it's interesting statement, nothing will be restrained, which they have imagined to do. And we know the thoughts of their imagination back in Genesis 6 was only evil continually, right? Wickedness. So evil and wickedness, no doubt. But I like what God says. It's almost, it's something that he's allowed. Nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. Now think about that today. Didn't one time we imagine things that have come to pass? What have you? What has man imagined that has worked? You've been to the moon. You have, too.
Yeah,
no, really, I thought you were on the last show. So, but at one time, it was just an imagination, wasn't it? But they accomplished it. What else? What's that? All right, submarines going under the water. Okay. Airplanes. The Wright brothers. Try to think about that, how insane that must have been. I want to get up there like the birds. Oh, you come on, what are you talking about? And they've done it. Okay. But I mean certainly with cell phones, you know, things that back 20 years ago, computers. Yeah, the internet. You couldn't even have imagined some of this stuff. And it's coming fast. And then, as the Lord tarries and as man today, Babel, it's Babel, coming together, one world government, one world religious system, what is God going to allow? How much is he going to allow? You talk about cloning and all this other stuff. Man, because he says nothing is going to be restrained, which they've imagined doing, until he intervenes.
Transporter,
you know, I thought about that one before, too. That's true. I thought about that. This travel, you know, boom, you know, and you think, no, that'll never happen. Think about how many times people would have said that will never happen. You just wonder. You know, as they work with lasers, you know, and things like that, you just wonder, what in the world are they going to be able to accomplish with this stuff? And they've been doing stuff like that for a long time. Behind-the-scenes stuff. Gary?
In Randy Alcorn's book, Heaven, had an interesting take on this, that in heaven, you know, in this case, they were all one for a bad reason.
Uh-huh.
But in heaven, we'll all be one for a good reason.
Exactly.
And just opening up your imagination,
what can be accomplished, yeah.
All the corporations are trying to get, you know, their employees to all work in the same direction.
Yeah, yeah.
In heaven, probably will be amazing what can be accomplished.
Yes, sir. But God knows, he knew then, he knows now, nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. Right, verse 7. Go to, let us go down, and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. Now, it's interesting, in verse 7, God uses the term, go to, let us go down. Isn't it interesting in verse 3? Didn't they say that? Go to, let us. It's a response to this. The man says, go to, let us. God says, no, go to, let us. All right, we'll take care of that. Now, the Trinity in action. All right, and the language, he's going to confound the language. And if you want the first biblical case for tongues, what biblical tongues are, this is it, okay? Truly, this is it. It's languages, okay? Language. And it's almost a reverse order of Acts chapter 2. Here he he confuses their languages, their tongue, so they don't understand one another's speech, so they will end up doing what? Scattering, right? Now in Acts chapter 2, he uses tongues not so they don't understand, but so they do what? Do understand, so they can be in Christ, correct? So it's like a reverse order, right? Here he, tongues is, for a, it's a judgment almost. Get out there, get out of here, don't come together and scatter. In Acts chapter 2, it's the same thing. I'll give them the gift of tongues so they can communicate to one another, so they can come together as the body of Christ. The gospel could spread, and in a sense they did scatter, but with the gospel, a good thing. Alright, verse number 8 then, he says, so the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. So there must have been mass confusion. The Lord scattered them abroad, and he had an intention here to do this. Let's look at a couple verses here. Deuteronomy 32. Deuteronomy 32, verses 7 and 8.
I just have a question. If they're building this tower and they don't believe in God, who are they really building it to then?
Who are they building it to? The religion. It's like religion. Themselves, they are their gods. That kind of thing.
So it said, let us build the tower, just keep going up?
And just like Satan said, I will ascend. Mm-hmm. All right, same thing. They're trying to ascend. They're trying to be gods, that's all. It's a religion. It's without God. I mean, they probably had, I'm going to imagine, they had their idols. They might have their gods, plural, you know. What it comes down to, you're your own God, because you make your own religion up, really. All right, Deuteronomy 32, 7 and 8.
Remember the days of old, consider the years of many generations. Ask thy father, and he will show thee, thy elders, and they will tell thee, when the Most High divided to the nations their inheritance, when he separated the sons of Adam, he set the bounds of the people according to the number of the children of Israel.
All right, so he set the bounds of the people according to the number of the children of Israel. God had a specific way of going about this. It doesn't tell us exactly what he did, but he had a plan on how he was going to scatter. And he did. Okay? And there's a purpose for that. In the New Testament, Paul is preaching on Mars Hill. Okay, listen to what he says here. Acts 17, 26 and 27.
And hath made of one blood all nations of men, for to dwell on the face of the earth, and hath determined the times before appointed, and the bounds of their habitation, that they should seek the Lord, if haply they might feel after him, and find him, though he be not far from every one of us.
All right, he says that man is of one blood, so they're the same, but at the same time, he appointed the bounds of their habitations for one reason. It says that they may seek the Lord. Okay? So he said, man, I don't understand all this and how God did this and why I was born here and they're born over there. However God figured that out, it was you were born where you were born that you might seek the Lord. In New Guinea, they're born in New Guinea that they might seek the Lord. In Africa, they're born in Africa that they might seek the Lord. That's what that verse says. He's appointed the bounds of their habitation that happily they might seek the Lord. He knows what he's doing. Okay? His intention was to scatter in Genesis 11 because doing this with everybody did not accomplish, they would not happily seek the Lord. You follow? So he says, I got to scatter you and I've got a plan. And that was his plan. So people would seek the Lord. Okay, so next time you say, man, it's just not fair. What about the heathen over here? Acts 17. He's appointed the bounds of their habitation, that happily they might seek the Lord. Don't question what he's done. He knows what he's doing. Alright? Alright, verse number 9. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth. and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. All right, so it's Babel because it means confusion. And boy, they must have been confused when this happened. All of a sudden start speaking different languages. Mass confusion. Until you finally meet up with somebody who speaks your language, I guess. I don't know how he accomplished it or whether he directed that. I don't know. Dave?
Some words in the Bible are left in the Hebrew language as Babel.
I'm sorry?
Like the way that it's translated for us, the way we understand Babel.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a word that is derived from Hebrew?
It's Old Testament, so I would assume so. I mean, I can't tell you the Hebrew definition of it. I know the word means Babel from, you know, reading, you know, dictionaries and commentaries and stuff like that. I know the word means confusion. So it must be. Go ahead.
Do you think it took, like, days or, like, years for them to start going off in their own direction?
Good question. Doesn't really tell us. Exactly.
I think it was by family.
Okay.
If you look at back in chapter 10, it says, these are the sons of Shem.
Uh-huh.
After their families, after their tongues.
Mm-hmm.
And their land.
Okay, and he must have orchestrated that somehow. Families divided, obviously some certain families speaking the same languages, and then finding other families that, you know, spoke that. That's a good point. Okay, would have been an interesting task though, and initially must have really been something to not be able to communicate with somebody that you could communicate to before. Interesting. Andy, go ahead.
You got, this is about 300, 400 years between Noah and Abraham. How many people do you think were on the earth at this time?
Oh, man, I couldn't even begin to guess. How do you calculate that?
It doesn't seem like there could be millions. But
I don't either.
It started with eight. Less than 350 years later.
Mm-hmm. So at least enough to go off in their continents or whatever and start over.
That's only 1620. We're only 2005. And that was, what, 102 people?
I don't even know.
And we got billions now.
But it's more than most.
Yeah, but still, I mean, I understand that immigration thing, but... We have grown exponentially, you know.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, I'm not saying there weren't just, you know, probably a few thousand, but it's not going to, your point is well taken. Certainly not going to be the billions that we have today. But a lot, I would say. I mean, I couldn't even begin to understand how to calculate that to see, but.
And they've lived a long time and
they
had kids forever.
Mm-hmm. And they probably had plenty of kids, yeah. And I think they did multiply faster because of that too, because how many children they could have in several hundred years as well. Good question. So, all right, now along the lines of Babel and Babylon, it's confusion. Now I just want to talk a little bit about Mystery Babylon. All right, let's go to Revelation 17. I've got, somebody's probably going to read this, but go ahead and look at Revelation chapter 17. And because this is Babylon and Babel, we can learn some things from future Babylon, okay? Revelation chapter 17. And let's see, somebody have that to read? Did you have that already? All right, go ahead, first five verses.
And there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials, and talked with me, saying unto me, come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of their fornication. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, naming seven heads and ten horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand full of abomination and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth.
All right, so you have Mystery, Babylon the Great, and you have the woman and the beast, right? Okay, Satan, the beast. She's all decked out, colorful, jewelry, okay, like a harlot would be. And Babylon, Babel meaning confusion, okay? This is religious confusion, right? Okay, you have everybody trying to come together from different religions, different walks of life. The Antichrist is trying to work through to defy God. All right? So you have a harlot woman. You have a beast involved. You have the name confusion involved. And you have the devil. Okay? Mystery Babylon the Great. Now, let's go to Leviticus chapter 18. And again, Old Testament always has something for a New Testament passage or spiritual truth. Okay? Leviticus 18, 23.
Neither shalt thou lie with any beast to defile thyself therewith, neither shall any woman stand before a beast to lie down. There too, it is confusing.
All right, you have a woman and a beast. And there is the term used, confusion. Follow? It's a physical, literal application of something to come, spiritual. Okay? Woman, beast, confusion. Revelation 17, woman, beast, and what? Confusion. Mystery, Babylon the Great. You follow? Okay, so when we read these things, and you're like, okay, well, that makes sense. You know, bestiality, not good, but it's confusion. There's a lot more to it, isn't there? A lot more to it than what meets the eye. All right, so mystery, Babylon, or confusion, woman and a beast, and the whoredoms, the fornication, okay, is used also, spiritual fornication in Revelation 17. All right, back to chapter number 11, and let's see, verse 10.
Hey, Bob.
Go ahead.
Calculation.
I knew somebody would. I love it. All right, go ahead.
The population only doubles every 20 years, which would be very conservative. After 400 years, you can have 4 million people.
4 million?
Okay. So it would more than double.
Yeah, that's a conservative estimate. I got you.
I went back to the Jews, Abraham, 400 years after Abraham was born, there were 600,000 men. We estimate maybe up to 2 million. So starting with one person, growing over 400 years, and went up to about 2 million.
Okay. Good. All right, let's see. Verse number 10. These are the generations of Shem. Shem was 100 years old and begat Arphaxad 2 years after the flood. Now, this foundation of chapter 11 is getting ready to introduce Abraham. Okay, setting the stage now. Through Shem comes Abraham. And from Genesis 12 on, we're dealing with Israel. Okay, and from this point on. And Abraham's lineage. Verse number 11. And Shem lived after he begat Arphaxad 500 years, begat sons and daughters. Now we're going to see that the ages begin to decrease because in verse 25 of this chapter, Nahor lived 119 years after, and you're just going to see a slight decrease eventually here because, again, it's after the flood. Right, verse 12, Arphaxad lived 530 years and begat Selah. And Arphaxad lived after he begat Selah 403 years, begat sons and daughters. Seah lived 30 years and begat Eber. Seah lived after begat Eber 403 years and begat sons and daughters. Eber lived 430 years and begat Peleg. And Eber lived after he begat Peleg 430 years and begat sons and daughters. And Peleg lived 30 years and begat Reu. And Peleg lived after he begat Reu 209 years and begat sons and daughters. And Reu lived 230 years and begat Serug. And Reu lived after he begat Serug 207 years and begat sons and daughters. And Serug lived 30 years and begat Nahor. Now you'll start to get familiar with the names. Serug lived after he begat Nahor 200 years and begat sons and daughters. And Nahor lived 29 years and begat Terah. And Nahor lived after he begat Terah 119 years and begat sons and daughters. And Terah lived 70 years and begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Now these are the generations of Terah. Terah begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran begat Lot. You remember Lot, right? And Haran died before his father, Terah, in the land of his nativity in Ur of the Chaldees. And Abram and Nahor took them wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai. The name of Nahor's wife, Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah, and the father of Iscah. But Sarai was barren. She had no child. All right. So in this context, Abraham's wife is mentioned. Abram and Nahor took them wives. Abram's wife, Nahor's wife. There's no mention of Lot's wife here. This is just a side note. So, possibly, he got his wife where? Possibly. It's just interesting, it doesn't mention her. Okay, and we know, did somebody get Luke 17, 32? Over here, did anybody get that? That's all right, you don't have to. Thank you. That's exactly what it was. Remember Lot's wife, all right? And that's what Jesus said. All right, now we know when he says, remember Lot's wife, well, she turned and all this other stuff. She may have been from Sodom because she's not mentioned in this text. All right, Sarah was barren. She had no child. We covered this in Kings, but I'll let you know again that there are seven women in the Bible who were barren and conceived. All their sons have to do with a picture of Jesus Christ. Sarah, who had Isaac, and Isaac's from the promised seed. Rebecca, who had Jacob. Jacob is Israel. Rachel had Joseph. Joseph, the biggest type of Christ in the Bible. Manoah's wife had Samson. Samson was a judge. Hannah had Samuel. Samuel was a prophet. The Shunammite woman had a resurrected son that pictures Jesus Christ. Elizabeth had John the Baptist, who was the forerunner of Christ. So there are seven barren women mentioned in the Bible that would conceive a child, and all sons and all of the sons had something to do with a picture of Jesus Christ. Okay? That's just God, again, God doing something, showing us things through the Scriptures. Alright, and then to finish out chapter 11, verse 31, and Terah took Abram his son, and Lot the son of Haran his son's son, and Sarai his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife. They went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldees to go into the land of Canaan, and they came unto Haran and dwelt there. And the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. So, verse 31 tells us that they left there. It's partial obedience by Abraham, because in 12:1, which we'll see in a moment, he was to separate from his country and from his kindred, from his father's house. So he did not do that. All right. It tells us that Abraham took his family with him, including Lot. All right. Because Abram was called out of Ur of the Chaldees to go into Canaan. So he was called out of, again, that Babylon area, that confusion area. That's why God wanted him out of there to go start over in Canaan. And he said, separate from your family, but he did not do that. And we know that that causes him problems later on, okay? Partial obedience. Okay, that's chapter 11. Before we take a break, any questions or thoughts on chapter 11 or anything before we move on? All right, chapter number 12, verse number 1 says, Now the Lord had said unto Abram, Get thee out of thy country, and from thy kindred, and from thy father's house, unto a land that I will show thee. All right, so God, once again, when he calls his people, and he calls them out from somewhere, to go somewhere he's appointed them, all right, in this case, the promised land, okay? And it's the same thing, you know, again, Old Testament occurrences are a lot of times New Testament spiritual truths. Calls his people, whether it's out of Ur, Babylon, or Egypt, calls his people out of there, doesn't he? And get to your own place, all right? Separate. And that's the biblical New Testament admonition for the Christians, all right? 2 Corinthians 6, who has that? 2 Corinthians 6:14 to 18.
For the love of Christ constraineth us, because we thus judge that if one died for all, then all dead. And that he died for all, that they which live should not henceforth live unto themselves.
All right, check your spot there. 2 Corinthians 6:14 to 18.
Oh, 6:14. Sorry. Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers, for what fellowship has righteousness with unrighteousness, and what communion has light with darkness, and that concord has Christ with Belial? Or what part has he that believeth with an infidel? And what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For ye are the temple of the living God. As God has said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Wherefore come out from among them and be separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you, and will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty.
Alright, so in the New Testament, don't be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. We separate from them. Same thing, when God calls his people out, he's looking for them to be separated from the worldly, ungodly influence. Alright, he says, he even will go as far as separate yourself from your country and from your kindred, from your own father's house. Is that a New Testament principle as well? You better believe it is. All right? That's Matthew 10:34 to 38.
Think not that I am come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword. For I am come to set a man at variance against his father, and the daughter against her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a man's foes shall be they of his own household. He that loveth father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he that loveth son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he that taketh not his cross and followeth after me is not worthy of me.
All right, so family can get in your way to spiritual growth, can't it? Definitely. Because they don't think like you when it's saved versus unsaved, right? Causes lots of problems. How come you can't come on a Sunday? Because we have church on a Sunday. What about Sunday? We can't have church on Sunday night. You know, anything you can think of, and you probably all have dealt with it, okay? How come the presents can't say from Santa? You know, we don't think the same way. How come your kids don't trick-or-treat? Sorry, I probably just offended a bunch of Christians, but how come? Because the Bible says, be not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. What fellowship hath light with darkness? The dark days of Halloween approaching. Okay? What fellowship do you have with that? All right? Abraham. God told Abraham to separate from his family. He did not, and it cost him. It cost him. His father died in Haran on the way. God's plan, no doubt. And you know what Lot did. Caused him all sorts of trouble, we'll read about. All right? And he tells him to go to a land. Doesn't even tell him really. Go to a land that I will show thee. Now that part he did well. He said, all right, let's go. God says to go. We're going. I don't know where we're going exactly. Okay? And we read about that in Hebrews. Somebody have Hebrews 11, 8 through 10, Dan, and then 14 to 16 and 39.
By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed. And he went out, not knowing whither he went. By faith, he sojourned in the land of promise, as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country, and truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned. But now they desire a better country, that is in heavenly. Wherefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city. And these all, having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise.
So you can see that they got to the land, and that was the promise and all that. But you know what? And Hebrews is telling us they didn't get the full picture yet, did they? The city that they would get by faith. And, yeah, we're supposed to separate from the world and ungodly and all that. You know what? We see through a glass darkly, but then face to face, and we'll get the city whose builder and maker is God, won't we? One day. Alright, so chapter 12, verse number 2. And I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee, and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. Alright, so Abraham was promised a great nation in number, and he did get that. If we look at a couple passages, but later on, 2 Samuel 24, verse 9.
And Joab gave up the sum of number of the people unto the king, and there were in Israel 800,000 valiant men that drew the sword, and the men of Judah were 500,000 men.
Right there, at that time, is 1.3 million men. Okay? I'll make it be a great nation. That was years later. 1 Kings 4:20.
You are in the land with you by the sea in my ship.
Okay, like the sand, his heritage is seed, is likened to the sand and the dust and the stars. And that was, make of thee a great nation. He says, I'll bless thee. Genesis 24 refers to this covenant, the blessings Abraham got. 24, 1, 31, and 35.
And Abraham was old and lost his knowledge, and the Lord had blessed Abraham in all things. And he said, come in, thou blessed of the Lord, wherefore standest thou without? For I have prepared the house and room for the camel. And the Lord hath blessed my master greatly, and he has become great. And he hath given him flocks and herds and silver and gold, and men servants and maid servants and camels and asses.
All right, so that came true. I'll bless thee. He did. A great nation. I'll bless thee. I'll make thy name great. Abraham's name. Is it great today? Absolutely. Okay? Well known. Hebrews chapter 11. All right, so again, last chapter, it was attempted at the Tower of Babel, but without God. Will make us a name? They wanted a great name. God says, the very next chapter, he calls out Abraham and says, I'll make thy name great. Thou shalt be a blessing. Verse 3, and I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee. And in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. All right? We need not look any further than this country. I'll bless them that bless thee. Okay, we've generally been a friend to Israel. We better hope that we continue to do that as long as we're alive anyway. Alright. Now, Psalms 122, verse 6.
Free from the peace of Jerusalem, they shall prosper that love
thee. Alright. They shall prosper that love thee. In the context of pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Okay? Prosperity. You want to pray for the peace, don't you? You want to be a friend. If you are familiar with Matthew chapter 25, let's turn there. Jesus speaking about his kingdom. And he mentions here how they would treat Israel. You had the sheep, chapter 25, verse 31, the second coming of Christ. He gathers all nations, sheep nations, goat nations, and then he goes on to say, come in, I was hungry, 35, you gave me meat, thirsty, you gave me drink, stranger, you took me in, naked, clothed me, sick, visited me, prison came in unto me, and they basically said, when did we do these things, Lord? And he says, verse 40, and the king shall answer and say unto them, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you did it, you've done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, you've done it unto me. And then, conversely, the goat nations that are cursed, they didn't treat his brethren correctly, and they were they weren't blessed. Okay? So, a lot of this will have to do with the nation of Israel and how they are treated by other nations. All right, so the blessing, you can go as far as looking at our country and being a friend of Israel. The cursing and how they've treated Israel, you can look at Germany. They haven't fared too well, have they, of late? Or, you know, nothing compared to this country. Spiritually cold, cold. Spain, cold. Okay. The Palestinians, enemies of Israel, not a good thing. Many cults, the enemies of Israel. Sooner or later, it's going to cost you if you curse Israel along the way. Nations that have cursed Israel along the way in history, it's cost them. Okay? Because a blessing, a curse, and a cursing.
I know if you think back and look at the history of the United States when we just started, all the blessings that we were given at that time against the British and how the war and all that kind of stuff. You can see where a lot of our blessings started from.
Yep.
And then you also look at it, if the United States wasn't here, what other country, what would Israel be today?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Who would step in and be what we need?
No question. All right, chapter 12, verse 3. He says, shall all families of the earth be blessed. Revised Standard Version, listen to what it says. By you, all the families of the earth will bless themselves. A little different, isn't it? A little different. Okay? Will bless themselves. Instead of in these shall all families of the earth be blessed. And you know what? All families of the earth have been blessed. Israel, from Abraham, Israel, from them came the Bible. From them came the Lord Jesus Christ. And, of course, there are several promises associated with this covenant that that God gave. And it's just to your advantage to support Israel. Verse number 4. It says, so Abram departed as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. And Abram took Sarai his wife, and Lot his brother's son, and all their substance that they had gathered, and the souls that they had gotten in Haran. And they went forth to go into the land of Canaan, and into the land of Canaan they came. And Abram passed through the land unto the place of Sychem, unto the plain of Moreh. And the Canaanite was then in the land. The cursed, wicked Canaanite is in the land. And before man enters into the promised land that God gives him, Satan's there waiting for him. Waiting there to discourage him, isn't he? All right. God's given us a lot of opportunities as Christians. We come out, we separate. We're to be blessed. We're to live for the Lord. Any opposition? A little opposition, huh? The Canaanite is waiting to discourage us. The Canaanite's in the land, okay? Right, verse 7, the Lord appeared unto Abram and said, unto thy seed will I give this land. And there builded he an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him. All right, so the Lord, this would be the second time the Lord appeared unto him, because Acts chapter 7 tells us that the first time was in Ur of the Chaldees that the Lord appeared unto him. Acts 7, verses 2 and 3.
And he said, men, brethren, and father, hearken. The God of glory appeared unto our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia, before he dwelt in Charan, and said unto him, get thee out of thy country, from thy kindred, and come into the land which I shall show thee.
All right, so he, in Mesopotamia, before he went to Haran, the Lord had appeared unto him. So this is the second time here in verse number 7. All right, and he says, I'll give it to unto thy seed. Okay, again, there's no question as to who the land belongs to, in spite of what Islam says, in spite of what the media says. God is very, very clear on who the land of Israel belongs to. All right, verse number 8, and he removed from thence unto a mountain on the east of Bethel, and pitched his tent, having Bethel on the west, and Ai on the east. And there he built an altar unto the Lord, and called upon the name of the Lord. All right, so he was ready to go when God called. All right, he took, pitched his tent, ready to tear it down, ready to move on, built an altar. He worshipped his God openly, unashamedly. The altar is on a mountain like Noah's was, again, a high place. And it started out, as we talked about last week, the high place started out in a good way. All right, verse 9, and Abram journeyed, going on still toward the south. And there was a famine in the land. And Abram went down into Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was grievous in the land. All right, so he goes to Egypt again. In your Bible, Egypt being a type of the world. And when he goes to sojourn to Egypt, God is not mentioned again until there's trouble. Okay? So he goes there to sojourn, but he really should not have gone there. So the fruit of this sojourning that we're going to read about here is he lied. He nearly lost his wife. Innocent people were given plagues. He brings Hagar, and Ishmael comes from this as well. This is not a good sojourning for Abraham. So mingling in Egypt was negative. That's what the Christian does when he, worldly Christian, mingles with Egypt, and it leads to compromise and sin. God never told him to go there that we read about. He sojourned there himself. God never told him. It just says there was a famine. Abram went down to Egypt to sojourn. All right? Trouble, trouble, trouble. Verse number 11. And it came to pass, when he was come near to enter into Egypt, that he said to Sarai, his wife, behold, now I know that thou art a fair woman to look upon. She was, I think, about 74 years old or so. But she was still beautiful because she lived to be 127 years old. She's really like a middle-aged woman, if you will, maybe late 30s, 40s, something like that, okay? So he says, you're a fair woman to look upon. All right, verse 12. Therefore it shall come to pass, and the Egyptians shall see thee, that they shall say, this is his wife, and they will kill me. But they will save thee alive. All right, I have a feeling he knew this wasn't a good place to be. All right? When we leave God out, anything is possible. He's willing to sacrifice his wife's purity to save his own life. You walk into Egypt, you start playing by their rules, right? Anything's possible. 13, say, I pray thee, thou art my sister, that it may be well with me for thy sake, and my soul shall live because of thee. All right, so according to 20:12 is a half-truth. Genesis 20, verse 12. What does that say?
And yet indeed, she is my sister. She is the daughter of my father, not the daughter of my mother. And she became my wife.
All right, so it's a half-truth. She was a half-sister that he married. But he says, he's still misleading here, the information that he's given. 14, it came to pass that when Abram was coming to Egypt, the Egyptians beheld that the woman that she was very fair. The princes also of Pharaoh saw her and commended her before Pharaoh, and the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. They entreated Abram well for her sake. He had sheep and oxen and he asses and men servants and maid servants and she asses and camels. All right, so Abraham gains worldly riches from a pagan king here. All right, now this is where he got men servants and maid servants, and you want to bet who one of the maid servants are here, right? Hagar, okay, the mother of Ishmael. Verse 17, and the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. And Pharaoh called Abram and said, what is this that thou hast done unto me? Why didst thou not tell me that she was thy wife? Why saidest thou she is my sister? So I might have taken her to me to wife. Now therefore behold, thy wife, take her and go thy way. And Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they sent him away and his wife and all that he had. Sometimes the lost world shows more integrity than God's people. Do you know how many of God's people have committed adultery? And how many lost people would never do that? They show sometimes more integrity than we do. And Jesus would say that. What's Luke 16:8 say?
The Lord commends the unjust steward because he had done wisely for the children of this world. And in your generation, the answer is the children of
life. Interesting. Jesus said, the children of this generation are wiser than the children of light. Sometimes they show more wisdom than we do. You ever see Christians and you say, what are they doing? Right? Sometimes the lost world behaves more wisely than a Christian does. All right. And this pagan king, Pharaoh, knew adultery was wrong before the law. There was no Levitical law. But he knew it was wrong because it was the law written where? At his heart. Okay? It's called a conscience, right? All right, and that's Romans 2. Romans 2, 12 to 15.
For as many as have sinned without law shall also perish without law, and as many as have sinned in the law shall be judged by the law. For not the hearers of the law are just before God, but the doers of the law shall be justified. For when the Gentiles which have not the law do by nature the things contained in the law, these, having not the law, are a law unto themselves, which show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience also bearing witness, and their thoughts the mean while accusing or else excusing one another.
Okay, so the law written in their hearts, the conscience, all right? It doesn't take a genius to figure out murder's wrong, okay? To have another man's wife is wrong, okay? It's the law written in their hearts. See, where'd that come from? Darwin, where'd that come from, right? Okay, came from your creator, because you were created. Came from God. Okay, any questions on that? And that kicks off Abraham and now gets us into the mentality of his seed and the patriarchs, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, etc. Okay?